Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Governor Tony Evers proposes a state budget that would dramatically expand state programs and spending and restore collective bargaining for many public employees. Republican legislative leaders label that budget a liberal wish list that they will largely ignore. 1 million Wisconsinites have now gotten the COVID vaccine, and Jill Underle and Deborah Kerr will face off in the April 6th election for Superintendent of Public Instruction. Rewind, your week in review for February 19th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm Brianna Riley.
I want to welcome Brianna Riley. She's the state government and capital reporter for the Capital Times. More about her later, because we've got so much news to cover this week. The Governor Tony Evers, it's his second budget, and we're going to spend a little bit, most of the show, talking about some of the major initiatives in it. One thing that I want to start with is I want to do it by the numbers. We can do this fairly quickly. The governor presented a all-funds budget, which includes UW tuition, transportation, two-year total of $91 million. That is a first-year increase. Remember, it's a two-year budget cycle for all funds, seven point three percent. And then the second year, 2%. And then when you have state government central checkbook, it's called the general fund. So legislators are closely watching the increase in general fund spending. That 1 year, according to the budget document presented by the governor's office, 1 year increase of 9.3%, second year of the general fund spending, 0.4%. But what strikes me is how we're going to close this budget year with a projected $1.8 billion, and the governor's office document says net balance. That drops 1 year later to July 1 of 2022 to a positive net balance of $713 million. Then, because it's a two-year budget, as I said, the end of that two-year budget cycle, $47.7 million net surplus. So over the 2 years of this budget, cut it from $1.8 billion surplus to $47.7 million. Pretty big decrease, team.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting. We've talked before about the approach governors take to budgets. One is kind of usually the difficult one, that you do things that might be unpopular, set you up for a reelection budget. What's interesting about Evers' reelection budget is, one, there's a lot of base stuff in there. He talks about repealing most of Act 10 by restoring collective bargaining powers for a lot of public employees. He talks about wanting to restore the prevailing wage for local construction projects paid for by governments. There are a lot of things that are Democratic, like talking point, Democratic priorities, but it was kind of odd the way the governor presented this budget, because he didn't really focus on those things. I mean, these are like big deals, like repealing Act 10, right? So does he really want to do that, or is he putting that in there as a checkbox for his base? I mean, Evers is former state superintendent. A priority is always education. So to me, part of the centerpiece of this is a $1.6 billion with a B increase for K-12 education. That is all of what the state superintendent, Carolyn Sanford Taylor, wanted, and maybe even a little then some. It would be the biggest increase, bar none, I've ever seen for K-12 education. It also would set a benchmark going forward of what we'd be spending on K-12. I don't think that's going to make the final cut with Republicans.
Yeah.
And bottom line of this budget is, you know, Evers kind of had a choice. He could have either gone big like he did with like all kinds of Democratic initiatives and watched Republicans rework the budget, or done a more modest one and still watch them rework the budget. It's not going to matter which budget he presented to Republicans. They're going to rework it to their liking and see if they can get one that's conservative enough that they like, that Evers can sign, or even push him the edge to see might he actually veto the budget they produce.
Brianna, were you also surprised at the huge drop in the available surplus? The net balance is the term the Evers administration uses.
Yeah, definitely that caught my eye. I want to bounce one thing off of what JR said about K-12. You know, this is a $91 billion budget, and education is the biggest driver of new spending within it. I mean, that's not really a surprise given Ivory's background, the $1.4 billion increase he proposed last time. But just remember, Republicans only approved a fraction of it last time. $500 billion increased a little bit by Ivory's veto pen, but we're looking at maybe $565 million in new spending for K-12 2 years ago.
Right. That's a very good point. Okay. This is a time when I want
to listen to about a minute plus of two segments of what Ivory said in his budget speech. Please.
I need you to really hear me. Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to make health care more accessible while saving your hard-earned tax dollars. Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to fully fund our public schools while cutting taxes at the same time. Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to support our farmers, our rural communities, and our small businesses while protecting our natural resources and investing in new, clean jobs. Don't let anyone tell you we can't spend within our means while still supporting Wisconsinites who need help to recover. To my friends in the legislature, our opportunity to bounce back from this crisis calls for you to summon the will to get this done. There's no time for false promises of hope and prosperity with empty words that you know full well won't match your actions. You can disagree with me if you want, but don't punish the people we serve so you can settle a score no one but you is keeping.
As JR and Brianna alluded to, I just want to look at seven of the biggest spending increases with general fund money. Again, that's the main state checking account. Over the two-year budget cycle, as JR said, an upper of $1.64 billion in the Department of Public Instruction, K-12. $709 million of that is for special education. When I saw that in the governor's budget, I did a double take. But anyway, upper for the Department of Health and Department of Health Services, upper over 2 years, $463 million. I believe, and JR and Brianna can correct me, I think that assumes that we expand Medicaid. Then the additional money, the $100 million venture capital fund, and the additional aid for small businesses, $320 million for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp. Children and family, upper of $247. 192 UW system, which includes this unique provision, the UW could borrow. Very interesting, but also a tuition freeze. $156 million upper public service, $127 million Department of Workforce Development. Any PSs on these major uppers, team?
No, I mean, remember too that we have significant revenue growth in Wisconsin in this biennium projected from the Fiscal Bureau. And Ivory's has a $1.8 billion surplus to start with, revenue growth, and is proposing raising taxes by net $1 billion. And also, don't forget that some of these pieces, like the Medicaid expansion, they drive the spending increase by drawing down significant federal dollars. The Medicaid expansion, I think, is like $1.3 billion in new federal money just for doing that. So that's why this is such a healthy increase, because, yes, he's spending a lot of state money, but also drawing federal funds to kind of pay for programs like Medicaid.
And Brianna, is there any one of those seven increases that you wanna comment on?
I definitely want to keep an eye on the $192 million increase for UW system. That would be the biggest overall increase in education spending in the last two decades, according to the governor's office. The bonding provision is especially interesting. It's something Dave Murphy considered putting in a bill a couple years ago, but he never did. So this issue has never been debated before the legislature.
Okay, now I want each of us to focus in on one
specific area of the governor's budget. JR, I want you to talk about the tax cuts and the revenue increases and the tax cuts. So go ahead, please.
So $1 billion net upper in state taxes. Remember, it does not include local taxes. Governor Ivory's wants to allow cities and villages of up to 30,000 people or more to add a new half-cent sales tax, to allow counties to add an additional half-cent sales tax. We're not sure how much that would impact taxpayers if everybody did it. So there's that piece we're not sure about. But in state taxes, net $1 billion increase, the biggest chunks of that are conforming state laws to federal statutes when it comes to some tax provisions, again asking to put a cap on the manufacturing ag credit for manufacturers. It would cap income at $300,000 that would be qualify for that credit. There's also a change, the capital gains exclusion he wants to implement for people who are single people making more than $400,000 and couples marry more, making more than $533,000. I'm not in that tax bracket, so it wouldn't impact me, but that change would be about $350 million. There's also a change in the tuition credit for people put their kids in private schools. Then let's talk about the tax breaks. There are ones for veterans, low-income folks, self-employed deduct their health insurance. I mean, you're seeing kind of a value statement from Evers about he wants to do things that would help folks that, you know, quite frankly, are a little more likely to vote Democratic than the wealthy who tend not to vote Democratic. It's a value statement from the governor about what he wants to do. Also, don't forget, he just signed a bill this week that would cut business taxes by, well, the overall price tag is now north of $500 million right, with the various tax changes in there. But he just signed that bill, which also impacts the bottom line for this budget because that bill wasn't accounted for when he did this. Two, Republicans are not going to do everything Evers wanted. So the question I have is, what might they do on taxes? Keep an eye on a bill that Dale Kuyenga has been pushing. It would collapse one of our tax brackets in Wisconsin. We have four right now, go down to three. It passed out of a committee unanimously, which means Democrats supported it. Watch to see if that makes its way back in the final Republican version of the budget they send back to Evers sometime, hopefully this summer.
Yep, and I just want a quick footnote on, I just find it so interesting. The fine print of the governor's budget, a $60 tax credit for those that buy flood insurance. This is just indicative of the broad sweeping provisions. We could talk 3 hours about all the different individual provisions in the budget. Okay.
Got to put this one quick plug in there. If you had this mythical median value at home, see, we talked about this for years, this mythical median value at home, you know, it's a gauge of how property tax will be impacted by the budget. According to the governor's office, if you have a home, this mythical median value at home at $197,200, your bill that was $3,317 this past December would go up 23 bucks this December, another 80 in December of 22. That'd be an increase of 0.69% and 2.39%.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Brianna, talk to us about what the governor has recommended, please, on juvenile justice reform and criminal justice reform.
Yep, to start, we need some quick background. 3 years ago, Republican Governor Scott Walker and lawmakers passed a bipartisan bill to close the state's two youth prisons, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, after reports surfaced that guards were mistreating the youth housed there. So under the plan, the facilities would be replaced by state-run Type 1s for more serious juvenile offenders and county-run secured residential care centers for children and youth. Fast forward to now, all but one county has dropped its plans to build that replacement facility, and the state replacements were just never funded. So that means it's highly unlikely that we'll be able to meet the July 1st mandated deadline to close the state's two youth prisons. Evers' budget now would still commit to closing those two sites, but it would throw out the timeline for doing so. He also changes how those facilities would be replaced. Rather than type ones, which is a designation he eliminates altogether in his budget, he is instead calling for smaller regional-based facilities. And on top of that, there's a bunch of other changes to juvenile justice he's proposing, raising the age to charge juvenile offenders as adults from 17 to 18. Apparently, we're one of three states that hasn't done that yet, sending counties an extra $19 million to reimburse them for costs associated with juveniles who allegedly violated the law at age 17, raising the age of delinquency from 10 to 12, and throwing out the state's serious juvenile offender program. Joint Finance Committee co-chair Mark Bourne was asked about this a couple times this week, and he said Evers' proposed changes for youth should be a discussion outside of the budget, and should include lawmakers. They should have been roped in up front, he said. I also want to talk briefly about the other changes the governor is proposing more broadly to criminal justice. He wants to obviously legalize recreational marijuana, which Republicans have said is DOA, expand expungement, get rid of the felony penalty for bail jumping, increase funding for treatment alternative and diversion programs. The last thing I want to mention here, Evers wants to create a sentencing review council to study and make recommendations for equity in sentencing, and that comes after a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel report last week, I believe, showed that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has been sitting for almost a year on a study that shows Black men convicted of felonies have a 28% greater chance of receiving prison sentences than their white counterparts. There are other disparities, too, in that report. Native American men, for example, are 34% more likely than white men to receive prison sentences, and Hispanic men are 19% more likely. So there's a lot to break down in this area.
That's an excellent summary,
Brianna. I can't add anything. Anything you want to add, JR, on criminal justice, juvenile justice?
No, just the point that's made about Mark Borna's comments. Look, when they passed the closure date for Lincoln Hills in 2018, they rushed that bill through because Scott Walker had a problem with that youth prison and the headlines coming out of there about mistreatment of young offenders. They got that thing done knowing they hadn't adequately funded the system they're proposing. And since then, it just hasn't gotten off the ground. So yeah, it could be done in a standalone bill, but to date, they haven't been able to figure a way to compromise and agree on anything. So maybe this gets the conversation going, but yeah, I don't expect to be in the final package when it's all said and done.
Thanks. I want to talk about what I found as a surprise. The governor's proposal to partially repeal Act 10. Exactly 10 years ago, the Capitol that we know and love and cover was swamped with protesters opposing Act 10. But we went through the timeline last week that got it passed. Well, the governor wants to, let me get it right, restore collective bargaining for, and this is an important term, frontline public employees. A state agency would identify frontline employees who could, again, collective bargaining. It would also end the Act 10 requirement that workers in a bargaining unit must annually vote to recertify that bargaining unit. And finally, it would end the Act 10 requirement that a majority of all in a bargaining unit, and not just a majority of those voting, must recertify union representation. Now, here's my question for two of you. I assume that teachers, members of WEAC and the Milwaukee Teachers Union would be considered frontline workers. Do you think that's a safe assumption, or what have you heard since this partial repeal was proposed?
Well, the governor's office told us that the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission would kind of make the determination. Yeah, I think it's a safe bet the teachers would be in there. I also think it's a safe bet this is not going to see the light of day in the Republican budget. And at some point this spring, the first thing they're going to do is strip out a whole host of Governor Evers' proposals, including Act 10, the Act 10 changes. What's kind of interesting and also odd about the way he approached this was, one, if this is really something he cares about, why wasn't the budget last time that he did 1 to 2 years ago? And two, he never mentioned the speech. I mean, this is kind of a major change that he proposed, but he didn't talk about it. And there's a way that you could couch it. I mean, you're opening up a scab for people in the Capitol, but there's a way you could talk about it, you know, in terms of wanting to improve middle class incomes, things like that. But he didn't really approach it. So it's kind of an odd way to approach trying to make such a dramatic change in state law.
Yeah, it really is. Brianna, what have you heard about the proposed partial repeal of Act 10 doing your reporting since a budget?
Yeah, I mean, it's not getting anywhere. Just like JR said, Republican legislative leaders, as you alluded to, have repeatedly said that Act 10 is settled law. There's no way that this is getting through the budget and will probably be one of the first things to be stripped out once negotiations get to that point.
Before we turn to the
criticism, a quick question for both of you. Is this a budget submitted by a governor laying the groundwork for reelection next year? Brianna, your thoughts?
There is a lot of debate about this, actually. There's questions from some on the right about why he didn't go more towards the middle. There's other questions about why he didn't allude to these, or, you know, outrightly state more forcefully in his speech these more, the Act 10 partial rollback and all of these other things in his actual budget address. So it's sort of a mixed review, I think, from folks I've talked to.
JR?
Well, Robin Bostrom thinks this is a reelection budget. He told us as much Tuesday night after the governor released it. What's kind of interesting, again, that point we talked about before about the approach governors usually take of the second budget is the one that makes everybody happy and feel all warm inside. That's not what Evers did. But he did do a base budget. And why is that important? Well, because maybe he's thinking that in 2022, it's about having a sighted base. As we've seen midterm elections in Wisconsin in the last 16 years, the party in power in the White House has struggled. Now, we will hopefully be in a post-COVID pandemic environment in 2022. That could scramble the entire dynamic. But if we're not, if there's still some kind of issue out there or the economy is struggling still, the base is what's important because you have to have an active, engaged base to turn out for you to give you a shot. Maybe that's what he's thinking. I've also had people tell me that by doing a budget like this, it must mean he's not going to run for election because he's not doing that traditional path of, hey, everybody, I'm going to make all of you happy. We'll see. I've been assured by Democrats left and right that Governor Evers is going to seek re-election in 2022. I can tell you that he really enjoys parts of the job like going out and talking to school kids, getting out of the Capitol, all things he can't do right now with COVID going on. His least favorite part of the job is the politics of it, dealing with people like legislative leaders, you know, just the theater of the Capitol these days anymore. That's not what he enjoys, but that's a big part of the job. So my guess is he's looking at re-election and leaning toward it. But if he wakes up tomorrow and says, I'm not going to run, I don't think he may be surprised.
Okay, and time's slipping away, but just a quick PS on this topic. We don't know yet how much state government would get if President Biden's rescue plan for America, $1.9 trillion. So that's another part. We may have to redo the budget, but we need to move on. Okay, now let's hear from seven Republican leaders about the governor's budget. First, let's have a video from Speaker Voss, Senate Majority Leader, and Representative Amy Loudenbeck, please.
I'm sure we were all optimistic that Governor Evers would do something that the co-chairs had asked for, which is to say, let's actually start with a budget that's realistic, not putting in things that we know are poison pills. He's been talking about that term a lot over the course of the past 6 weeks, so I guess he's now taken that as his standalone philosophy. So unfortunately, I assume we will probably have to start from scratch, but I don't want to make that decision. That's really the co-chair's decision. I don't think the idea of using the budget as a way to deliver a political document, which is really what Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and that whole climate change task force, it was all about advocating for a very far left agenda. It was not about trying to find a compromise in the middle. And I think that's just indicative of how this entire budget has been. How do we look at things that we can come together and find an answer on, as opposed to what it seems like, which is often a political document to appease somebody's very liberal base?
To answer that question, when we don't know what he's going to be investing that money on, with just some broad platitudes that he says in his speech, and we don't have the budget ahead of time, and we needed to dig into it. I mean, some of those are more policy-driven decisions anyways that should go through the typical committee process. And, you know, at a time when we need to invest in core priorities, starting a whole bunch of new programs seems like maybe not the best road to go down.
They've had 2 years to put together a re-election budget, and they've directed their agencies and their cabinets and their budget shop to incorporate every bit of political talking point garbage that they could come up with that they haven't done yet, put it in a document and send it over to us. So again, we have to be the adults in the room.
Now I just want to go quickly to reactions from four other members of the Joint Finance Committee, Co-Chairman Howard Markline. I don't think we should be changing some of the policies that got us this record surplus. Co-Chairman of Finance, Representative Mark Bourne, legalizing and taxing marijuana and other divisive policy issues will be Bourne's term jettisoned very soon from the budget. And school choice must be expanded, not frozen, said Senator Mary Falzkowski. Senator Dewey Strobel said, this budget takes your financial resources and says, we'll decide, we're smarter than you in state government. JR, just quickly, because we are running short on time, anything from the WisPolitics session yesterday with both Bourne and Markline, quickly?
No surprise, they're going to strip out marijuana, legalizing marijuana, $15 or the minimum wage increase. I mean, like, basically every big ticket item that Evers wants, they're going to pull out.
Okay. Let's move quickly to the COVID update. Yesterday it was announced that there will be a COVID vaccine registry starting March 1. You could go online. You could verify if you're eligible based on the current criteria, and there'll be a new set of criteria, teachers, grocery workers, jail inmates, prison inmates on March 1. Hopefully you could go there, establish whether you're eligible. If you're eligible and it'll show the nearest location where vaccine is available, you can schedule an appointment. If there's no appointment available, you can put on a waiting list. And this would facilitate, if you get an appointment, They will already have your information. It would speed up your first shot. They also noted yesterday the State Fair Treatment Center is closed, although they said we could reactivate it. Now let's look at the numbers for COVID. We're now getting, Deputy Secretary Julie Williams Van Dyke said, 115,000 doses per week from the federal government. That's a 64% increase over mid-January. That does not include the 18,000 doses a week that are going to Walgreens, although some of those have been slowed by the storms throughout the nation. We now have 1,070,201 vaccinations. That's a dramatic increase. I think they said we were able to get to a million in 66 days. I think Deputy Secretary said that. 13% of have received at least one shot, 5% completed vaccinations, 40% of those 65 and older got at least one shot. Quickly update, we now have positive cases, 557,000, 32 deaths. Our 7-day average of positive cases has dropped. And so that's the update on COVID. Any PSs on that?
Just that, remember, we were on the worst in the country just a few weeks back in terms of getting shots in arms. Now we're one of the best. And all the criticism that you heard from Republicans about the rollout has all suddenly evaporated. Sure, it's just a coincidence, though.
Okay, not only did we have a state budget announcement on Tuesday, President Biden in Milwaukee for his first town hall, we had an election. So let's go through those results. 7 candidates on the primary ballot to be superintendent of public instruction. That primary was won by Pecatonica Superintendent Jill Underley, former Brown Deer Superintendent Deborah Kerr. You also had a primary in the 13th Senate District to replace the vacancy created when former Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald got elected to Mr. Sensenbrenner's seat in Congress. That April 6th runoff will be John Jagler, the Republican state representative, and Melissa Winker. And in the 89th, vacant because former Representative John Nygren resigned shortly after being elected. The winner there, Elijah Behnke, as a Republican, will face off against Carl Jager, a Democrat. Any surprises there, JR and Brianna?
Behnke was kind of a dark horse because the realtors spent $150,000 at least to help Michael Kunisch get through the 89th in the primary. Debbie Jocks was running as kind of the Trump candidate. Behnke was in third place for fundraising, but he just out-hustled on the doors, and that mattered. In a low turnout primary, that matters, and he just outworked them.
Did you follow the DPI at all, Brianna, or maybe not? Just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, not too many surprises in DPI. Kerr was a very strong fundraiser. She has won the backing of Republicans, although she describes herself as a pragmatic Democrat. Lots has happened in the day since, though. I don't know if we want to get into that, but essentially she has now suspended or deleted her Twitter account and issued an apology after she, a white woman, responded to a tweet explaining her experience with the N-word on Tuesday evening. So there's been some fallout this week. JR can talk more about how her campaign manager has quit. And it's an interesting way to approach a general election, that's for sure.
Right. Okay, JR, let's go to
stock points. Stock picks, rising, please.
So John Jagler and Elijah Behnke, I was watching these primaries for a couple of reasons. One of them was I wanted to see, is there really a Trump thing going on in the base right now with Republicans that's going to really kind of be a factor in primaries? If you look at these races, not necessarily. Jagler had the support of the NRA, Wisconsin Realtors, the Republican State Leadership Committee, Americans for Prosperity, Don Pridemore, former state rep. He kind of ran as a Trump candidate, the anti-establishment guy, and Jagler won almost 2-1. Now, Pridemore wasn't a perfect vehicle for this because he had some residency issues. He didn't really raise a lot of money from anybody besides his own pocket, so it wasn't great. But really, basically the bottom line is candidates matter. You can't just say, I'm pro-Trump, and win a Republican primary in Wisconsin. You got to be a good candidate, much like in the 89th AD, Elijah Behnke. He just, like I said, out-hustled people. When you're talking about a race where 1,000 votes, 1,100 would have won, he got to 1,500 or so because he just worked the doors. Candidates matter. Not just a label of being pro-Trump in Republican primaries.
Okay, time is short, JR. Mixed.
Alex Lazary, hey, look, let's bottom line. The guy's family money is maybe his biggest selling point It's also made his biggest hindrance. He launched for U.S. Senate this week. The question that I have is, are Democrats looking for the son of a billionaire New York hedge fund manager to be their next standard bearer for U.S. Senate? I don't know. He had a really impressive campaign video that Ray rolled out. A lot of impressive endorsements, like David Crowley, the state, the county executive of Milwaukee, president of Milwaukee Common Council, some nice things there. But again, is that where the party's at? There's primary looking ahead to Ron Johnson in 2022.
Got it. Okay, and falling, sir.
Turnout, 324,000 people voted in the DPI race on Tuesday. That's not good. 7.2% of the voting age population. I don't know how bad it is historically speaking, because the Ethics Commission or Elections Commission doesn't track February turnout, but that is one-tenth of the voters who voted in November. So kind of a sleeper race on Tuesday.
Okay, we may go into overtime here. I just want a short personal update. I began as a journalist. I began my career as a journalist. I started my career as a journalist 51 years ago in January. Let me tell you what it was like then, just really quickly. When I was a cub reporter for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald in January of 1970, we would type double or triple space our stories. We would then paste them a footnote to the younger generation, to my 9 grandchildren. It's a typewriter, early communication tool. Google it. But anyway, we would compile stories, glue them together. They would go real long. They would drape all over the desk. It was just so much different from what it is now. We have a 24/7 news cycle. The rule is, if you get a nugget of information, post it. Hit send. Get another nugget, post it, hit send. Just complete. It's just been amazing to be a part of that revolution in journalism. Why 32 years in the Capitol? Well, because it is the crucible, the crossroads of what I call 3 P's: politics, personalities, and power. So just fascinating. But now, quickly, I want to get this Bible verse right. Ecclesiastes, 3rd chapter, 1st verse, to everything there is a season. This is a season that I welcome Brianna as the new Wisconsin Eye host of Rewind. Brianna, introduce yourself.
Thanks, Steve. I've admired you for so long. It's just such an honor to be here with you. I've spent the last 4 years covering Wisconsin government and politics. I started at WisPolitics with JR. Thanks, JR, for hiring me. And currently, I'm covering the State House with the Cap Times. I was raised in Chilton, Wisconsin, the eastern part of the state by Lake Winnebago. Beautiful place. Highly recommend checking it out. And as a print reporter through and through, I'm excited to try out this medium and very grateful to WISI for bringing me on.
Okay, and you're not going to sing the Chilton High fight song, right?
I'll be doing that today.
Okay, thank you. JR, I want to thank you. You are
a 24/7 political reporter. I know you coach your son's sports, but you're 24/7. And I really want to thank you for providing the nuance and the context as a co-host on Rewind. Thank you.
It's been an honor to work with you, Steve. You were here before I got here. You started before I was born, not to rub in your age, but I admire your longevity. That is a rare thing in this business anymore, and it's a tribute to you and your talents. You made it this far. We'll be missed.
Thanks. Thank you, JR. Okay, here's where we stand. Brianna Riley, JR Ross, and the very, very talented team at Wisconsin High. So here's what I want to say. Rewind is in great hands. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm JR Ross.
And I'm Brianna Riley.
That's Rewind for February 19, 2021.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.